He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, joined on this fine Thursday evening. There's a chill in the air, Raj. There's football on my TV. There's a fall TV schedule ahead. Baseball's playoffs are getting ready to get going. I guess training camps are right around the corner, too. But I brought you on the show today to be our football and fall TV movie correspondent. Are you all researched up? Are you ready to go?
So I don't know what that means. You said that to me earlier in the week that there's a like fall TV season like coming. You mean like Christmas movies? Like there's like holiday movies? Is that what you mean by that? Like
no
Thanksgiving movies?
No, like no? Okay. Like channels tend to put their like best content out in the fall. Okay. It's when people are like coming back from summer vacations and that's when like you run your Emmy nominees and your Oscar nominees. They tend to run around this time too. Okay. The summer is usually for like the bigger shows, the bigger content, right? That's when you have like, you know, Game of Thrones ran during the summer. People, you know, if you have summer blockbusters, right? Marvel just, you know, made $1 billion with Deadpool and stuff. No, in the fall, like this is when, you know, this is when it's kind of part of my entire like run up to the NBA season. Like, you know, it like helps get me ready for it. I look ahead at the fall TV schedule. Like right now, Industry is playing right now and it's the best show on TV. And you know, when I see content that is like at that level, that's when I start saying, and then, you know, you start to get, we've been in like the low 90s all week. We've gotten some fall thunderstorms and stuff already. Like, and then again, you know, out here in where I live in Austin, everybody here is getting ready for UT football is, you know, opens up this upcoming weekend. And then I have my fantasy football draft on Saturday night. And that like that signals to me, all right, it's time to really start buckling down, start really, you know, getting ready for this upcoming season, getting everything lined up and planned and all of that good stuff. And that's why like I look forward to the actual shows and movies themselves. But I also just really look forward to this time of year because we are finally out of the absolute Sahari desert. There's Sahara desert.
Sahara desert. Yeah.
What the hell is Sahari?
Safari, maybe.
I don't know. Sahara desert. That is, you know, late July, all of August, early September. So I'm stoked. I'm happy to be here.
I mean, it wasn't that. I mean, so I think you're right in most summers, but this summer we got the Olympics. I mean, like, so there was some water in that Sahara desert. But no, I don't recognize any of the TV shows that you mentioned there. I was at the Sparks game yesterday and they showed Jason Sudeikis, I think. I think I saw him in a movie called RV. He was in a movie called RV, right? Like I think like a long time. I think I've seen that one.
Produced one of the greatest memes of all time. It's where like the I think it's Jennifer Aniston says to him, like, you know, you're getting paid how much for this? And then I'm getting $40,000. And then like, there's like the younger girl who's like, you're getting $40,000. I'm getting $10,000. And then the guy who winds up hilariously, this youngest actor who is in an absolutely ridiculous role there, right? Winds up being like a Marvel character. He was like a great addition to the second season of the Bear. And then he got a bigger role here in the third season of the Bear. Like somehow became like a sex symbol, like became like a really good looking dude. That guy who like says to the younger girl, you're getting paid. Like, I love that stuff. It's so good.
but yeah, he was at the Sparks game, and so was, you know, Jared Vanderbilt, and I was pretty upset that the Sparks did not show Jared Vanderbilt on the screen, but they went and showed Jason Sudeikis. So yeah, not up front with all the TV shows and stuff like that.
Do you think they tried to show Jared Vanderbilt, but he was actually unavailable to be shown?
That's not nice. That's not fair.
He made a brief return, looked good, and then like immediately ran to the locker room.
No. He wasn't watching very much. He was very much on his phone. Wasn't very interested in the Encore product, but appreciate him coming out and supporting.
Sabrina sent that in the Slack, and it made me like guffaw, like just guffaw laughing. It like I could just see you boiling in that, you know. I was simmering there on the sideline, just like, he's right there. He's an actual Laker. It wasn't at crypto.com, was it? Was it at the Crypt?
It was at the Crypt, yes.
It was at the crypt.
It was at the Crypt. And so Jason Sudeikis is sitting like...
Well, Sudeikis is a bigger star. So like...
Than a Laker? He's a bigger...
Raj.
In a basketball environment.
Like, yes. Very much so. He was there in a WNBA sweater, Raj. He actually cared about the game that was being played.
Vanderbilt literally plays on the Lakers. Like,
He's a much better ambassador to the sport than Jared Vanderbilt. Like, significantly better. And then also, like, he's a star of one of the biggest shows ever that transcends sport and TV and Ted Lasso. Like, that was one of... That got people through COVID. Like, that was like one of the highlights of that. That was just unbelievable. But I was like, no, Malcolm, I swear, Malcolm, Sabrina sent me that Slack, and I read it and just went like, that was my literal response, because I could just totally picture Raj sitting there happy to be, you know, credentialed for this game, super happy to be involved in all of this stuff. But then also, like, every so often looking up, like, just, are you going to show him? He's right there.
I could not believe it. Just really quickly on that Sparks game, this is how I know, I guess, I'm kind of different than other people. I got there like 2.5 hours early, Anthony, just to watch Sabrina Ionescu warm up, right? And Sabrina Ionescu, gold medal winner, maybe has the best shoes in basketball right now.
Yeah.
I asked like 4 security guards, has Sabrina warmed up yet? And like, everyone's like, I don't know, I'm not sure. Like, how do you not know Sabrina Ionescu has warmed up yet? And so I see our actual friend Sabrina, like, has Sabrina warmed up yet? She's like, no, you're good. And I start getting my, like, and then she comes out to start warming up. And I ask Sabrina, like, can I sit courtside? And she's like, yeah, you can sit courtside. I was like, are you sure they're not going to pull me away or anything like that? It's like, no, you're good. So I'm literally like, Sabrina's warming up right in front of me. I'm sitting courtside. I'm like looking around, making sure no one's about to like, hey, pull my shirt from behind and like move me. So I'm sitting there just watching, and Sabrina comes and sits next to me, and I feel like I'm too close, Anthony, because I can hear like Sabrina and her trainer talk. And I'm like, do other media members know they can do this? She's like, oh yeah. They're all like in the Chick Hearn press room. So
all right, I'll say this. So amazing. I'll say this, like, in your defense, like, to like the concern that you feel like you are where you shouldn't be. You know, like, I remember the first time I was credentialed ever in my life, and it was to a Dodgers spring training game. Mm-hmm. And yeah, same thing. Like, it was, you know, so spring training is actually, like, if you guys are baseball fans, is actually like, it's a really fun environment to go to, because you just walk around the facility and there's Kershaw pitching over there. There's back then, I have a great Puig story from that. So anyway, I was there for a game, and it was like after the game was done. I know, was it before? I think it was before. You know, you get there a little early and you walk up, and there were like two giants. Like, these security guards were actually bigger than the baseball players. And in the NBA, right, like, the, you know, everybody that you're covering is so big. Baseball is down to, you know, more my eye level. But the security guards, for some reason, were just huge people. And I was, like, you know, walking into the facility because we had a scrum with Dave Roberts. And I'm holding the door. And as I'm, like, holding the door, in walks like five players, like, you know, and like, they're like, I'm holding the door open for them and I'm getting ready to go in. And like, for some, like, as I, you know, how you like open the door and you hold it and you kind of face away from the doorway that you're about to enter into. And the whole time I'm doing that, I'm looking at the security guard and I'm just like, I swear, like, I'm like putting my credential in a place where they can see it. Cause yeah, it does. Like, when you're allowed to walk into the same building through the same entrance as the people that you're there covering, you know, after a lifetime of being on the other side of the rope for all the games that I attended, that was that I understand where that's coming from.
Yeah.
Where you lose me is getting annoyed that Jared Vanderbilt wasn't put on the big screen.
That's like, that's unacceptable. Unacceptable.
Today on the show, we're going to be talking about the off season that was basically that I would be absolutely shocked if the Lakers did anything between now and training camp that would, you know, materially change the roster as it exists right now. So we're going to, you know, look back on the off season that was, look ahead to the season that might be. And I'm going to give, you know, Raj, I'm going to lean on his optimism to, you know, for chunks of this show. I'm going to pick at that offseason a little bit. But I also, as I was like setting up the show, something struck me that I think is going to be completely unique in the LeBron James era, not just for the Lakers, but for any LeBron James team ever. In that, like, I think this is the lowest expectations for a LeBron James season has ever been. And I think that can be somewhat freeing. So we'll talk about that, on the back end of the show. I also, originally Raj and I were going to do a season re-preview of Jared Vanderbilt and Jalen Hood-Schifino. So he has a bunch of Jalen Hood-Schifino sats anyway. So maybe at the very, very end of the show, if we have time, we'll get to those. But, Raj, I want to ask you, we are now very far removed from an off season that produced Dalton Knecht and produced Bronny James, that saw Taurean Prince and Spencer Dinwiddie walk out the door. Those, I think, were the only, you know, real changes to the roster right now,
right?
That are, you know, really going to matter. So, like, we are now, you know, month and some change removed from how all of that played out. Where do you stand on the off season before we get to like expectations for this upcoming season? Where do you stand on this off season?
Yeah, this is kind of, I guess, what I expected. I mean, I tweeted out very early into free agency and trades and all that this summer that the team was going to sell us on Vando and Gabe returning, being the sells, along with Max Christie getting minutes.
When you sent that, did you think that was real or were you being kind of snide?
I was dead serious. I totally thought that was okay. What they were going to sell us, and that is what they sold us. And I think, Anthony, there's a way to sell that, you know, like 3-4 weeks or maybe a month before the season ends. But, you know, selling that after all the moves are made, I think it just comes off a little hollow. But like, I think this is it's a solid team. It's not a favorite in the Western Conference. Obviously the ending to Denver, puts a mark on kind of the roster and you see all the playoff performers. But when you just judge this on just a regular season team We just watched LeBron and AD. LeBron looked like he has very little decline in him coming, even for the following season. I thought AD looked the healthiest that he's had in the Olympics. He looked mobile. He looked like he lost a little bit of weight. He looked very athletic. He was very dominant defensively. So, like, you put those two together, I still feel like the Lakers have two top 10 players. And just regular season-wise, if you can separate, if you can compartmentalize kind of D'Lo in the playoffs versus regular season, right? Vando in the playoffs versus regular season. If you can compartmentalize those, I think this is just like a solid team. It's a team that can fight for a top eight spot in the West. Where that is, I'm not sure. I think there's obviously levels in the Western Conference, but it's just a solid team if LeBron and AD stay healthy. They both played over 70 games last year. That's what you kind of have to hope and pray on, that, you know, that occurs again. But they're in a tough spot where, like, they're going to have to attach a lot of first round equity to move players. And they obviously, I didn't believe they wanted to do that. Chris Haynes tweeted out they'll be armed with three first round picks this summer. I never bought into that. I love Dalton Connect, and I think most Laker fans do. Well, when you love Dalton Connect, that strips you down to two first rounders. And obviously I think you've written about this, that Rob likes to go into the season with at least one. So really you're armed with one first round pick, and that's not bringing much to the table. But I think it's a solid team. I don't know if that's being too optimistic. I think most people want to shove everyone off the boat. Like, this is a solid team that's running this boat. Like, I think the boat can move forward in the ocean. It just, I'm not sure it'll get all the way to its destination.
So I agree that I think people are a little too low on this roster as it stands right now. There's plenty of talent, you know. The problem is that, like, we know this isn't the championship team, right? And, like, we know, like, I think we can pretty much definitively say, like, the Lakers are, you know, they aimed for the middle this offseason. They didn't swing for the fences in a way that you would try, like, if you were being real if you had real belief in the LeBron AD combination, you wouldn't just kind of tap out, you know, in the way that I think the Lakers did here. And I think it started with draft night, and in the run up to the draft, all of the noise that I was hearing was that the Lakers were getting ready to use their pick on a player and keep that player. And once I heard that, that signaled the kind of offseason that they were going to have. Because, like you said, right, if you aren't going to trade the one pick that you have at your disposal before it becomes a player, that's when, you know, it's funny. A pick there are, like, moments where it is least and most valuable, right?
Right.
In its own calendar year. And it's most valuable the moment before you select a player. Mm-hmm. And it is least valuable the moment after you select a player.
Right.
And so, you know, once I was hearing that they were getting ready to, you know, to draft a player and keep that player, I started saying, well, you know, teams are going to ask for two picks, and you know, right, that Rob isn't going to give up two picks and go into a season with zero first round equity at his disposal. So I was like, I mean, unless the Lakers work the margins in ways that on the trade market in ways that we haven't seen since the Rui trade, this is probably going to be a really quiet offseason. And I was really curious what Lakers fans' reaction to it would be. And that was something that I was charting in, like, real time, was mm-hmm. how Lakers fans and especially, like, people covering the team. Like, we're in a really cool spot right now where I don't think, whether it's local media or shows like ours, feels that it owes the Lakers anything at this point. Like, you know, there was a time where I thought, like, Lakers Nation was a lot more, like, conscious of the things that it will or will not say about the Lakers in their analysis, right? And Trevor has been really hard on on the Lakers. Obviously, it was a little different with LFR because, you know, for a little while they were kind of an extension of the Lakers, so there were places that they couldn't go. But I've thought, you know, since the Lakers made one of the more befuddling decisions of the offseason, that I've really been curious, or I was curious what their thoughts on this season would be. And even there is, you know, some knocks that I don't think would have. And then the local beat, we're at a place where like Jovan is, mm-hmm. is comfortable enough to take his swings, and Dan is comfortable enough to take his swings, and so on and so forth. Whereas like growing up, one, the local beat was very much an extension of Lakers PR, right? Kevin Ding was like Kobe's like biographer while he was like covering him, and then eventually, you know, parlayed that into a gig with the Lakers. And it was a different time, but sure. I was really curious, and I was paying very close attention in real time to like how everybody would react to this. And I was really pleased to see that people were like, this is bullshit. Like and I'm sorry, it was like, we can explain some of the decisions and explain right. how they got here and all that stuff, but to basically sit out an off season in which LeBron and AD play the way that they played in that Olympic setting. Like if I were just a fan, I don't know how well I would handle that either.
I understand, you know, being pissed. And I think a lot of this is, and I can, Anthony, you hate when I say this, but I think that Denver series is a lot closer than, you know, people remember, but you know, in any case, I think, losing
if that's the case, like I'll zig where you think I'm going to zag. Cause normally okay. I would just laugh at that comment.
Okay. I know.
If that's the case, and you think the Lakers are actually closer to the Denver Nuggets got worse this year. So the Lakers technically had an opportunity sure. to potentially leapfrog them. And again, sat out the offseason.
Right. And I think part of this, my only, like, again, I'm not as, because I like the roster more than I think, you know, most people did. And I kind of like the strengths of it than others, you know, thought they had a lot more weaknesses. But my one kind of gripe is not moving D'Lo. I thought, you know, once D'Lo opted in, I thought that was a gift to the franchise. And you needed some contingency plan created once he opted in. And they just didn't. And it even, like, D'Lo's quotes once he opted in was, I'm excited to work with J.J. Redick, which, you know, tells you that there wasn't really, you know, a lot of option for moves to, like, get him off the team. But, like, I don't know, Anthony. I look at the, like, summer and I look at, you know, the guys available. I just don't know anyone who is available for even 3 first-round picks or 2 first-round picks. I don't know if you have names. Lauri Markkanen is, like, the mainstay this summer, and there was some haggling with the Warriors, but obviously that, you know, that never came through. The other guy was Donovan Mitchell. I don't believe he was ever actually available. And then when you get past those two, like, it's just really tough. But I get it from your point and from others as well. Like, you have to do something, right? You can't just let everybody opt in and then keep them all on the team. Like, you can't bring back the yeah. exact same roster with Dalton Connect and Bronny, who was...
We just saw Lonnie Walker take an Exhibit 10 deal
insane.
Today.
Insane. Absolutely.
He's better absurd. Than the, like, the last third of our roster.
Right, yeah.
Even our, though, you know, man, you hear me? Like, you know how annoyed or, like, how like, a certain way I feel if I'm referring to the Lakers as our, we, my?
Sure, sure. Yeah, Lonnie Walker, oh, my God, in Boston is just... highway robbery. Man, but I mean, soul. You know, Bronny cooking THT the other day, and like, I don't think Bronny will be ready. And I think a problem that we discussed a lot on this pod is there's a lot of players on this team that are rostered that aren't ready to play NBA minutes, and yeah. like, they are full NBA contracts. And I think that's, you know, part of a bigger issue in terms of the contracts that were dealt out a year ago. But it feels like, again, we're going to kick this can down the road and, you know, see what the team is in February. I understand that's very upsetting. I never thought, Anthony, there was any big move coming. And like, I guess I've kind of been accepting of like, this was going to be the result back before free agency even started.
So now with that said,
right.
How do you feel about the, cause I, again, see, this is where I know that I can be maddening to listen to and to talk to, because I do think that this offseason was a farce. Like, I do think that, like, you know, it's a giant black mark on the organization that they weren't even able to open a roster spot. Like, in a front office that, like, can't find it in themselves to open a roster spot is insane. That is absolutely mind-numbing, especially when you look at some of the guys who went for minimum contracts this summer. You were in a two-dog race for Klay Thompson and weren't able to seal the deal there, you know? And so when I step back and I look at it, I say, like, yeah, that sucked. In the moment, it was like, yeah, that sucked.
That was terrible.
But then I find myself saying this a lot about Rob, in that, like, a lot of these decisions make sense when they are isolated in their own vacuum sealed bags, because not trading two firsts for Jeremy Grant makes sense if you only have two firsts to be able to trade, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not trading a first for Dorian Finney-Smith when his market is below that of a first, not trading a first for Cam Johnson when his market is that of, below that of a first rounder for him, not trading two first for Wendell Carter Jr., not trading two first for Walker Kessler. Like, those decisions by themselves make sense. You know, when you look at them, when I say that out loud, it makes sense. That said, context always matters, right? And also, like, I know you don't watch the show, but in Industry, in the most recent episode of Industry, or was it the last one? I forget. It was either two or three. But there's a line in there. It was like, perception is reality. They're having this, like, kind of internal debate, this company that is at the kind of the center point of this TV show. There's this debate about, like, and it's a circular debate about, like, we decide what is reality, but then they're also slaves to perception, which they consider reality. And I'm more of the mindset that, like, perception is in its own way reality. And when the Lakers, like, they already, the narrative about this front office is that it is heavily nepotistic. It is heavily cronyistic. It is inexperienced. It is inefficient. It is simultaneously too thin, and also there are too many cooks in the kitchen. It's a weird combination, and if that's the perception of this front office, and then for them to not be able to take care of something so pedestrian as move Christian Wood, move Jackson Hayes, move Cam Reddish, get him off of your roster so that you can, you know, make even a marginal upgrade, because they don't need Cam Reddish this year. He's not an NBA player. So, like, that's where I find myself, even as I say, you know, here's why this kind of makes some sense in this moment, and this kind of makes some sense here. This kind of, like, it's still, I still wind up coming back to, you have to at some point prove people wrong.
So I think there's a couple things that I've kind of just settled with. The Lakers aren't in win now mode. Like, we forget about this, but, like, the Dan Hurley situation. Like, I don't believe you go out and get Dan Hurley
or JJ Redick for that matter.
Sure, but obviously Dan Hurley, I don't know. Again, I'm not behind the scenes, but, like, going after Dan Hurley is not what an organization does when they're in title or bust mode. That those just aren't actions that fit those words. JJ Redick as well, right? First time head coach. You also don't preach player development, right? If your goal is winning a title, and they just hired Ty Abbott, who, you know, we'll see how he does. I just don't think, like, their words have matched that. And you've mentioned Cam Reddish, you mentioned Christian Wood, you mentioned Jackson Hayes, and I'm not giving bail to Rob Pelinka because I don't have that much money in my bank account. But, like, I believe, like, I think, like, other teams also know those aren't NBA players, right? So those are assets you have to give up. And I say this all the time. You go through what the Lakers' quote unquote assets are, right? After you get through those two first round picks, 2031 now, and 2027, I forget. But after that, you're not trading LeBron, you're not trading AD. So next up is Austin Reeves. And I think the bar for what the Lakers would move Austin Reeves is very high. And I get that. I understand that, right? It's a win for the organization. You just talked about perception. That really improved their perception, I believe, around the league in terms of, oh man, look at what they found, right? And got him on the contract that they did.
I mean, his agency steered him to them. I don't think they knew when they got him what he would even turn into.
Sure. I mean, but, you know, you get credit for what the results are. And so I think that's the first thing teams ask for is, like, we want Austin Reeves. And I'm sure I see DeJounte Murray, you know, asked about in the chat. Like, I'm sure that was the first thing that was asked about for him as well. I think when you get to that point, the Lakers have moved to, we're not giving up assets. We're in title mode. But it's funny, Anthony, because the whole summer was this friendship or, you know, broship with Steph Curry and LeBron, both of them, you know, hugging and, you know, doing all this stuff and kind of flirting with playing with each other on their respective teams. They're in weirdly similar situations where both of them have kind of, both their franchises have looked and were like, this guy's not leaving. So we can, you know, play the long game. We can play it safe. You know, we can go get a DeAnthony Melton. We can lose Clay for nothing and kind of fill around some, you know, lesser piece to hopefully, you know, get up to a sum of Clay Thompson. And the Lakers kind of did the same thing. Like, LeBron James is not leaving. We are rostering his son for 4 years. His son's on the team for 4 years on a 4-year contract. We don't have to take, you know, big risks. And I think that's where they're at. It's a sad, like, place when you put it that way. It's dark, but they're like, hey, if we, you know, we'll see if we can contend. We're not going all in. We're not going, you know, we're not trading all our future capital on LeBron's 42 or 43, whatever it is. We're gonna stick with this team. They won 47 games last year. Hopefully JJ Redick's modern principles and schemes and stuff like that can push us over 50 wins. And I like, that's where I'm at. I've kind of been at the acceptance stage of that for a very long time, but I could tell you're still very more upset about this.
I think I've also accepted it. It's funny that you use that line here, the acceptance phase. You know what phase, like which process you're alluding to there is when somebody dies. So like you're comparing this off season to losing somebody you care about enough to mourn.
I can't.
Bye, everyone.